is another exciting episode of Extra Features Podcast. Today I have not one, but two guests in the house, and they're here to discuss Konga TNT. My guests will include John Miore and Greg Kelly, who would not come on here to do Ouija Shark because he doesn't have a copy of it. So welcome to the show.
Hello. Nice to see you again.
So I wanted to start off right at the beginning. Now, I've obviously watched the whole film, and I hope most people encourage them to watch the whole film. Because this seems like a family affair. All I hear is a bunch of Miores. I see a bunch of Kellys. You guys have to pay these people to be in your film, or you just say, okay, you want to eat this week? You're in the film. How does that work?
Well, family working on our movies, they get paid way more than anybody else would. Because we have to pay for the rooms, we have to pay for their food, their clothes, everything. So, one thing about Konga TNT that I want to say, since you brought up the kid thing right off the bat, is it's a kid's movie. A lot of people, the people who've illegally pirated the film seem to not be aware of the fact that it's actually made as a film for children. So we're getting a lot of people who are somehow baffled by the concept that it's silly for the purpose of making children laugh. And it worked. Children have laughed. So mission accomplished.
So let's start right there. So people think this is a film for adults?
I guess.
It's pretty clear once you start watching it. I mean, the kids are the stars. The kids are the ones that kind of drive the story forward. And then you get, you know, goofy characters like the ones that I play in the movie that are, I mean, really the whole point of those characters is, yes, to move the story forward or whatever else, but to kind of be, you know, just goofy characters that kids can laugh at.
I mean, yeah, we have a guy who's essentially Elmer Fudd getting farted on. We have, all kinds of, like, what's the joke? The kids made you say underwear. Like, there's jokes like that in there. So, someone commented on Facebook that somehow, and they were talking to Trevor Payer who wrote the scenes, and they said something about, do you think naming a character Major Bummer is a comedy work of comedy gold? And I said, well, his name's Major Bumier, but they mispronounce it as Mr. Major Bummer. And the movie's for kids. And the guy went, oh.
I really thought this was like a Saturday morning afternoon movie, you know, when I used to see Godzilla movies as a kid. Yeah. You know, I thought you guys stole a little bit from 50s jungle movies when John's looking in the forest looking for things. I was kind of like, I think he's been watching a little bit of those early 1950s, late 60s jungle films. Because that's what it came off to me.
Do you want to talk about the jungle film? Because that's kind of a whole different story.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. The jungle part, well, here's how Konga started, basically, is, obviously the pandemic, so we were all kind of bored. So I was trying to occupy the kids by making this film. This is a long way to get to your thing. If I wander, John, tell me about the jungle thing.
That's okay. Jungle thing.
So we started trying to, the kids wanted to make a giant gorilla movie. At the time, I had no idea Kong versus Godzilla was even being made. I had no idea. So we're just going to make a giant gorilla film because the kids want to. So we're doing that. And then I think I was talking to John and Trevor, and I said something like, you know, if I got a bunch of footage from some of my other movies that we either didn't use or alternate takes from movies I did make, then I could probably make this into a feature. And they were like, yeah, cool. Whatever we can do to help sort of thing. So I started making a movie in, I want to say 2016.
Yeah.
Called Skipper Smith and the Really Important Thing.
Yeah.
And it was a Indiana Jones parody, like a full on Naked Gun style Indiana Jones parody. And we'd filmed a day or two of it, and it was really funny. The script is really, really good. I wish we actually made it, but then we ended up losing our location for the summer, and then we lost our main actor for the summer. So then suddenly it was looking like the movie wasn't going to happen. So we had 2 days worth of footage from that movie, and I said, well, let's put that in Konga, and it'll make perfect sense because we're in it. Well, I mean, we'll make it make sense because it's a gorilla and we got a jungle. So let's kind of put that in there. So we tied together the whole stuff, all the stuff we filmed from Skipper, and I think there's footage, like outtakes from Iron Soldier, which is another one of my movies. And
would that be the airplane scene?
Yeah, that would be that. All the stuff about Skipper Smith is the all the jungle scenes at the beginning of the movie was actually from a different movie that never got completed. Yeah. And the only regret I have is I was in that movie too as like a Toth character from Indiana Jones. And the costume I had, I was really happy with it. I know Brett has a couple of scenes. Maybe you can squeeze them in
to the trying to
sequel somehow.
I was trying to. Because they're funny. There's a whole bit that we have of like sticky sap on a tree. That it's a whole, I mean, that doesn't mean anything to anybody who's listening to this, but we have a whole funny recalling bit about sap and people get stuck to the trees and stuff.
I think anyway. I remember having my head stuck to a tree for a while.
So we'll see. That may resurface sometime.
Okay. I want to go back for a second. So you have a bunch of films sitting at home, both of you, I presume, do. So when you had this project, you're like, I can make something out of this. Something in your head remembers all this extra footage you have lying around, or you just look at it again to make the film?
No, I usually remember stuff that I didn't get to use. I have this entire other thing from a movie I made called Danger Force of a Skeletor-type character that Jody Hawk, who's a veteran in one of my movies, I have that footage somewhere, and I cannot find it, but that I would love to put that in one. But there's all this... I can kind of remember. It's funny, you know, I can't remember the years the movies were made or all the actors that were in them, but I usually remember that.
I can remember the footage that I didn't use. I just don't know what hard drive it's on. You know, you make movies like this and you got like, I don't know how many you got, Brett, but I've already got like 6 or 8, you know, external hard drives full of movie footage.
Mm-hmm. Boxes.
Yeah.
And they're not labeled, I presume. They're just sort of sitting in a pile.
They're poorly labeled. It's funny. I have over a decade worth of mini DV video cassettes. They're meticulously labeled that I can't use anymore.
Yeah, great.
Yeah,
mine are labeled like 2017. I'm like, okay, how many different things did I do in 2017? And then you got to plug it in just to see what's on it.
Yeah.
Okay, before we get too off topic, I'm going to go back for a bit to hear. Why Conga? Just because it's in public domain, I presume? Or John read too many comic books as a kid and remembers the character?
Does it have to be one or the other?
No, it could be both. Totally both.
Well, I'm a big comic book fan, too, and so is John, and so is Trevor, who wrote most of the scenes, I think. And so I love Charlton Comics. And I think John does too. And of course. And they're the best letterer in the world works for Charlton. But I think I was just we were talking about giant gorillas, and then I remembered that there was the comic, and I checked the public domain status, and I did all my research and all that stuff. And the movie, they made a movie of Conga, but that is not public domain. But ours is based on the comic books, which are public domain. So that's the differentiating thing. And I don't even think there was any doubt. It was like, yeah, Conga. And I told the boys, and the boys were like, yeah, let's do that.
And I rewatched the original Conga once Brett, you know, came up with this idea and was telling me about it. I said, you know, I got that on DVD. I should put that in and watch it. And I was shocked at how, like, long-winded and slow that movie is. And in fact, like, Conga doesn't even grow to huge size until I think the last like 9 minutes of the movie. So it's it's good. It's got Michael Goh in it. It's it's not like I'm saying it's a bad movie, but I'm saying it's and there was no big Conga until so far into the movie. I thought, well, we got a shot at doing something fun with this.
Yeah, for sure.
No, I know.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, finish. Then I'll ask.
I was going to say, and like I wasn't really sure what we were going to do with it. I mean, I just kind of, it was literally just something to keep the kids occupied at first. And then once we started making it a feature, I don't remember what kind of conversations I was having about anything, but I think Ron Bonk from SRS might have approached me and said, "Hey, you looking to put that out?" And I said, "Okay." And I think it was literally just that. Like I wasn't in pursuit of anything like that. So
no, because I remember you telling me when we first started talking about it that you know, it was something we were doing for fun over the course of the pandemic. Everybody was kind of looking for something to do. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea I thought originally was it was just going to end up on some
YouTube
video platform like YouTube or Vimeo or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think I put too much thought into it. But then I think Ron was more aware of Kong versus Godzilla coming out than I was. So I'm sure he was savvy about that. But yeah, so I mean, you know, it's funny because I'm sure there's people out there saying it's a mockbuster. It was made innocently, unaware of the fact that we were mockbusting anything. So, you know,
yeah,
all in good fun.
Got to
I mean, John's got a history. John's got a history with big monsters as well. So we knew, you know, and he's played a monster in a couple of my things as well. So it was kind of a no-brainer, right?
Okay, I can ask finally. Okay. Who got to play Little Conga?
Little Conga? Was a is he here? Is he in the room? He might be in the room.
I'll find it.
My son Chance played Little Conga, who spoiler alert is a puppet.
Really?
I know, it's crazy. Some people on the internet are like, "Hey, wow, it's a puppet." I'm like, "I know, I bought it."
Not the little tiny one. There's one that's running around. In a suit.
Oh, in the suit. Oh, in that's not suit. Little Conga. Oh,
no,
that's,
no.
That's,
okay.
That's Lon Chaney III. No, it's a...
Okay.
Close. Yeah, the actual gross suit actor is me. And that's a whole different thing. Like, he's not really... he's only, like, human-sized for what? Scene or two, and then he grows and works out of the farm, the barn at the farm, and that's when it's me from about that point on.
Mm-hmm. So, is there a character you miss playing John in the film, or did you get to play everybody?
I thought when we first started going on with it, I was like, okay, I'll be Conga. I got the suit. You know, I'm the guy in lockdown. It's got the suit. I'll be Conga. And then Brett kept sending me script things like, "Hey, you want to be this general?" And I, okay, that's good. I can be the. And then it's, "Do you want to be this doctor?" He's the twin brother of the general. And I went, "Of course he is." You know, and you know, I figured I'd be playing my own mother sooner or later. But
and then we're like, "You're dead." Okay, we know you're alive again.
So much fun. So Brett, when you're making a film during a pandemic, I mean, you and John obviously have collaborated over numerous projects. Is John your go-to and you don't think of anyone else, or just John is up for anything?
That's a loaded question. I mean John and I have been friends for almost 10 years and stuff, so I mean I think of him often, but, there's sometimes as a project comes up and you go, well, I who you're going to call. Like there's certain projects where I'll be like, I got to call Janet Hetherington for that one. And then there's a giant gorilla comes up and you go, yeah, I'm going to call John and Trevor.
Yeah.
I mean, we did a movie.
I tend to be in the more silly projects or the more, really genre influenced projects, you know. Yeah. I get lucky every once in a while. Like Brett made Murder in High Heels, and I got to play like kind of like just like a goon, right? Hired muscle at a club, and that was really different for me, and I had a lot of fun with that. But typically, when I get together with Brett, it's like, okay, who do I have to splash blood on, or what, you know, what mud puddle do I have to fall in, or, you know, something like
that. Yeah.
Now, I know this, if you guys didn't write this, another guy named Trevor wrote it. The names made me laugh. Megan Bacon, I'm still laughing about to this day. It took me a couple of seconds. I read that name three times. I'm like, that is the best joke in this movie. And they're pounding it to death. And I loved it. Then you guys pounded it, consistently pounded it. Then you went on to these fake TV shows, and I was dying. Like, I still want you to make the movie. Sorry, before I finish, who's baking the cake? I'm dying to see that show, because that made me laugh so hard. So as a director, and you must be laughing inside shooting the scene, do you get over it? Like, you just hold it in? Because, I mean, I was laughing so hard watching this.
I don't laugh at the time, but I know, like, Trevor and I used to be in a comedy troupe together, doing improv comedy. So we both know how to bounce jokes off each other. So, but when I hear a joke that's a Trevor joke, I go, you know, I know. Like, if you've seen any of my comedies, usually the best joke is probably a Trevor joke. I mean, some of the stuff he writes is so absurd. Like, and then there's one where John did a graphic where he put a dog in a wig on top of one of Trevor's jokes. And I can't remember what the joke was, but it was just one of those things where the girl who played Megan Bacon watched it and she was laughing. There was a 1-2 punch.
So, John, when you're doing these films, I mean, you have a ton of green screen work. I mean, does Brett just let you go nuts? Or does he tell you what he wants?
It's a little bit of both. There are definite things that need to be done. Sometimes it's scripted. Sometimes it's just, you know, I mean, in the case of my friend Simon, I shot the scenes of him hunting in the woods, and then he gets farted on by Conga. I think the direction was literally, so what do you want Simon to do? And Brett said, I don't know, Conga farts on.
Okay. The hunter goes in the woods and Conga farts on him.
Yeah. And so I go away and I make that happen.
Yeah. And, you know, Conga's kind of unusual too, because I did that with John, and I also did that with Trevor, where because we were piecing it together from already existing footage too, I would say to Trevor something like, I need to get the gorilla from this point to this point with these two characters in 7 pages, and here's what I think they should do. And so, you know, and then he bangs that 7 pages and does, with whatever jokes as he can squeeze in there, and that's kind of the way it goes. And then, you know, when I give John stuff to do, it's mostly always scripted, but then there's always like little extras or different takes or, you know, just fun stuff.
Yeah. There's a couple of scenes with Conga where I'm just in the, you know, in front of my green screen with my son shooting, and my son would say, you know, what about this, Dad? Well, we should try this. And we, you know, we did a few.
Scene.
What's
the
that?
Kite scene. The kite scene was all you.
The kite scene is just something we said, let's just do that. It sounds like it's funny. So
working with your son, John, is this something you're teaching him for a role future in life, or is just a fun dad son thing you do?
I think it's just a fun dad son thing. My son just finished university, and he's looking actually for computer programming work right now. And so, you know, the stuff that happens at home, it's more because I'm, you know, hey, I need somebody to film for me. Can you come down and help me? You know, and when it's something like this where, you know, I'm going to do some crazy gorilla suit stuff, he's like, oh yeah, I'm in. I'll come down with that, you know, he's grown up watching all of these kind of movies with me. We have those similar. So when we're knocking out something like this that is something we enjoy watching in the first place, Yeah, he's doing it for fun.
So, Brad, this may be a loaded question, too. You've been doing indie films for a long time. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you haven't touched on you want to? You've done Ouija Sharks. You've done Giant Gorillas. I'm sure you've done... Oh, I can see a poster behind you for Dead Girlfriend, so zombies. Yep. What haven't you done that you're looking forward to? Or was there something in a, you have left on the cutting room floor I'll see in the future that you're going to use?
I'm doing Galaxy Warriors right now, which is my my space movie. It's not a Star Wars homage. It's an homage to the movies that are homages to Star Wars. So it's like my kind of Battle Beyond the Stars and Star Crash kind of homage type of outer space women in prison movie. That's what I'm working on right now. And the one thing, but I've announced I'm retiring from feature films. But one thing I haven't done that I've wanted to do is, and the only thing, I think it's the only genre I didn't really nail, is I didn't do a Universal Monster yet.
Hold on. I've always wanted to do that. Did you just tell me you're retiring from feature films?
Yep.
I can't let that go by. Why are you retiring from feature films?
So many reasons. I've been doing it 21 years now, professionally. And, it's a lot of things. I'm tired of getting ripped off. I'm tired of getting screwed around with. My back hurts, which is true. It's not, I have back pain on set now. And, what else? It's so hard to make a movie now. And, you know, distribution nowadays is pretty much online only. And that's not really my cup of tea either. I want to put out, you know, films. I don't want to put out content. So, there's that. There's like 101 reasons. I mean, I made a list of reasons to keep doing it and reasons to stop doing it. And the reasons to stop were outweighing the reasons to keep doing it. So, you know, I'm hoping that, Galaxy Warriors, I'm going to make the biggest, best, you know, mind blowing kind of thing I can make. Hopefully a lot of, festivals will take it on and I can get to all the world and meet a lot of the fans and kind of say like, hope you dig it. Cause I might do short films, but I'm not going to do features and I'm not going to try to sell them and I'm not going to get in the biz because I'm tired of making money for other people and not getting any of it back. It's exhausting.
I completely understand. You know? John, I just heard this retirement thing. It's kind of upsetting, but I don't get it. But that's okay. He's allowed to retire. You're not retiring, are you?
But you know what? Here's the thing about retiring. I retired in 2019 after making Creature from Cannibal Creek, mainly because I looked and I said, you know what? I'm really happy with this. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to do one as good as this. I just felt that it hit all the right marks for me anyway. I'm not saying it's the greatest movie ever, but for me, I was really happy with what I did with it. And I thought, you know what? My wife's retiring soon. We'll probably travel. So much for that.
Yeah.
We'll probably travel. We'll do other things. And I started telling people like I'm done. I'm finished. I'm not, you know, I started turning down things and whatever else. And then the pandemic came and I had nothing to do. And people kept asking me for work and that I could do at home. And then somehow 2020 became one of my busiest filming years. And now 2021 is already busy with a lot of stuff that I'm doing. And I'm thinking, didn't I retire 2 years ago? But oh well, here we are, right? So yeah, I don't know. Retirement's one of those, changeable things, I think, depending on the situation.
Okay. Back to indie film. So the industry's obviously, you're telling me, has changed over the years. It's difficult. You don't hate making money for other people. Why, Brett, did you ever take your films out by yourself then and distribute by yourself, or is this too difficult?
Well, I didn't really have to. I've been very blessed in my career. I've made 32 features or something like that, and every single one of them has been distributed internationally. So You know, and then every year, you know, every year or two, you meet a new distributor and they're your new sweetheart. And, you know, they want to wine you and dine you and put your movies out and treat you good and all that stuff. And, you know, then you find out who's honorable, who's not honorable, and who will pay in, who doesn't pay in, who doesn't honor the contracts that they themselves wrote and things like that. So, you know, if I were to do it today, I mean, I have a bunch of my movies that the rights have reverted back to me and I got to figure out what I'm going to do with them. But, you know, I might just release the movies myself now. I mean, I've never really had to before, but I might now.
Well, earlier, I mean, me and John had discussed this on earlier. I mean, I think nowadays you brought up the term content, but isn't mm-hmm. that what we're all becoming? Like, even myself as a podcaster, I need content. I have to mm-hmm. find new filmmakers constantly to provide me with content to my listeners. So, mm-hmm. but isn't that everybody needs content providers? So isn't owning your own films now and having the rights better for you so you can make some of your money you lost back?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think, I mean, I've got a catalog now. So, I mean, I'm lucky in that, hopefully, you know, someday I'll be like an Andy Milligan or, one of those guys where suddenly whoever the Arrow Video is of the future comes along and says, hey, we're putting on a Brett Kelly set. And, you know, here's a documentary about the horrible way he passed.
Great. I hate to say it, Brett, but I think I'm around to talk on that document. I don't want to go first.
You know, but I do have a library of films. So, I mean, that's going to be good for my future. I mean, I could retire and probably keep putting movies out, but people like J.R. Bookwalter have been doing that. You know, he retired. I don't know when his last movie was made, but he's been putting out his movies over and over again. So I could probably do that and just be fine.
John, would that be something you would look for in the future, seeing your films on an Arrow release, one of those boutique labels, like a box set?
I think it would be cool. But at the same time, I got to think, you know, I look at the kind of stuff that's on Arrow, and it's either really classic material, which isn't what I'm producing, right? It's like, you know, some old Italian film from the 70s that, you know, it has a whole different production level than the kind of indie films that I'm making now. So I can understand almost why it's on Arrow. I think a lot of time's going to have to pass where people start looking back at indie films from the last, you know, two decades mm-hmm. and start really valuing them. Right now, that's not out there. That valuing of, you know, the kind of cool stuff that's been done, just it hasn't come around yet.
That's another kind of reason that I'm a little bit down on things is there's so many of them, and there's so many like Tubies and Roku channels and all this other stuff, and there's like this million and a half things, and I'm like, so I want to make, like, in the case of Galaxy Warriors, for example, I want to make something that goes to big screens and we have some fun and it's an experience, and, you know, I'm sure it'll eventually get dumped on the internet somewhere, but you know, that's not, I mean, I want to watch I've been looking everywhere for Metal Storm, The Destruction of Jared Sin, and Runaway with Tom Selleck. I can't find him anywhere. It's the internet is so convenient. I can't find any of the things I want to see. that's my rant.
No, that's all good. Well, I just want to say, I mean, the guy was 32 films, Tubi, and you guys don't understand. I love Tubi. I got to say, I'm finding so many new films on Tubi and films I wouldn't normally check out, but Tubi's free. So for me, I'm like, yeah, I'll check out a John Mill. This film looks interesting. I can watch it for 10 minutes. I can watch it for an hour, and I didn't have to pay any money. So I really think Tubi is a way for independent films to find a home. I mean, I don't know if there's money on Tubi, but I think it's the way to go.
Yeah, what's good about it is that, you know, it's a legitimate resource that theoretically filmmakers get paid for, theoretically. And like you described, it's a good place for a lot of people to see their movies. But what I meant was that there's just so many, so many free disposable films that people will spend 10 minutes on. Like, I've seen reviews of some of my films and some of my friends' films where they say, I watched a minute and a half of this and this is the worst movie ever. You go, you know, yeah,
you can't know what it's like. Just like, you know, that people say you can't really enjoy a film watching it on a phone. And that's what a lot of films are now. It's just something to watch on your phone. So yeah. if you can get
fine.
It on the screen,
which is fine for some people, but it's not what I got into it for.
Well, I have to agree with you. I mean, when you go into making a film, both of you, same question, I got to think you guys are looking for, as you said earlier, a theatrical release. When you're thinking of making it, you got to be thinking big. I mean, I never want to watch a film on a phone, but maybe I'm old and that's the problem. So how do you guys feel about that when people tell you, hey, I watched your film on a phone, I want to punch them in the face, personally?
I got to tell you that the being old part's part of it. Because
yeah,
as an old guy, I spent a lot of time in theaters, and so theaters mean a lot to me. And I spent a lot of time amassing a huge DVD and Blu-ray collections. I love, you know, actually having the physical media, all the things that, you know, are kind of out of vogue now. And then you throw in a pandemic that pretty much has closed theaters for a year, and it's a big question mark of where do we go from here with yeah. any kind of film. I mean, I hear you talking about, Brett, I hear you talking about, be great to see this at film festivals. I just hope we have film festivals.
Yeah. You know, and as far as your question about people watching them on the phone, you know, it's fine. I mean, it depends on the movie. Like, Conga was made essentially for social media and net, you know, I mean, that one wasn't made for the big screen sort of thing. And some of the other ones, like some of the cheaper, sillier ones are just intended to kind of, we make them, let's see who likes them, let's see who laughs. But then there's movies like, you know, Galaxy Warriors or Murder in High Heels or My Dead Girlfriend or My Fair Zombie. And those movies we are meant to be experienced, we hope. And the experience of having them on a big screen where people all laugh at the same jokes, it's like when we did My Fair Zombie, we had a sold out theater in Ottawa and people fell out of their seats. Like, I mean, it was astounding. People literally fell out of their seats. So, you know, that's quite something. And then, you know, to see it pirated on YouTube with.
Okay. Brett, when you're marketing a film such as Conga TNT, how do you market it? Like, can you market it as a kid's film, or you just put it out there and hopefully people think it's a kid's film, or you just accept what they give you?
Well, that's kind of a good question when it comes, like, because I entrust a distributor, really. So in the case of Conga TNT, for example, Sub Rosa, or I don't know if they call themselves Sub Rosa anymore, SRS Cinema, put it out, and I usually entrust them to put it out the way they think it's going to be the most marketable. Like, they'll sell the most units. But I think in the case of this one, I mean, they did a fantastic job. Like, it looks great. Of course, they got the back credits wrong on the movie box, but they said they're going to fix that on the next one. But the cover art looks great and everything like that, but it does not scream kids movie. So that tells me they probably didn't want to market it that way, but see, you know, sometimes you run into problems like that, too, because then what happens is the internet blames me, because clearly it's my fault, because but I didn't have anything to do with the cover art, and I didn't have anything to do. I mean, I think I wrote the description on the back, which talks about children. And then, you know, I have other movies where I've had movies where, you know, the characters in the film are, you know, in their 30s, and they describe themselves as 30-year-olds. And stuff like that. And then the movie box comes out and says, teenage girls. And then the internet goes, hey, they're not teenage girls. Brett Kelly's an idiot. And they go, what? I didn't even, that's nothing to do with marketing, right? So, the director normally takes the blame for all of that stuff.
So what's my, you have nothing to do with the poster for this movie. That's not you at all. I thought you guys threw this together.
Well, I mean, the movie, I mean, we made one poster, just kind of like something to put on the internet. But then once SRS signed it, they did two incredible posters. They did one for a Blu-ray that was done by Matt Frank, who's now drawing the Ultraman comic for Marvel. And then the DVD that's in the Walmarts and stuff. I don't know who did that art, but it's really, really good. But yeah, no, it has nothing to do with us. The only time there's been two or three movies where I've actually commissioned the artwork myself and then let distributors use it. But usually I let the distributors handle the cost of that.
And the idea of posters, like we almost never, once it gets in the distributor's hands, it's even in the contract that, you know, they're going to have final say on whatever the art's going to be. And I'll give you a good example. I had a film that I did that came out a few years ago called Poltergeist Encounters. And the distributor sent me the artwork for it. And I said, this is really cool. It has, you know, like this possessed girl on climbing a wall like a spider. And I looked at it and went, that's really cool. But there isn't a scene like that in the movie.
Yeah.
And I mentioned to the distributor, you know, I've actually met just recently a woman that's like a contortionist that does all these moves or whatever. I bet I could get her back because she was in another film that I was making. I said, I bet you I could get her. We could just film an extra scene or two that we can include in Poltergeist Encounters so that the poster actually reflects something that happens in the movie. And he said, yeah, don't bother. Nobody, you know, nobody cares about, as long as the poster looks cool, nobody cares if it's a movie or not.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. I guess I know what you're saying, but I'm one of these weird people that doesn't watch trailers. So I would never know if, like, my friends will ask me questions because I watch the movies, but I don't know. So, I mean, like, let's go back. Like, Brett, when you're cutting a trailer for this, how do you cut it then, or a trailer to most of your films? Do you cut them like a children's film, or do you cut them like an action-adventure film for this?
For Conga,
they did one, didn't they?
Yeah, I think I cut a little sneak peek before we filmed anything.
Yeah.
And I used a bunch of stock footage. And then when they signed it, they did the trailer, and it's mostly stock footage. So, yeah, in the case of if I had done the trailer, though, I would have made it more kid-centric. But I didn't really – it was one of those things that happened all so fast that I don't think I really bothered. But normally when I cut a trailer, I'll I follow this kind of train of thought where – don't linger. Like, it basically, if a character stops moving or if the camera stops moving, cut away from it.
Okay.
So there's movement in every single second of every frame. And I learned that the hard way, cause my first bunch of movies are slow, or the trailers are slow, but if you cut everything on the action, then it makes it look more exciting, even if it's not.
It sounds like the Mortal Kombat trailer I told was really good, but the movie wasn't. You're too big a director, do you like drone shots, or you feel they're just, you have to use them occasionally? John, you can have the same question.
Sorry, do I like what shots?
Drone shots. Like, in your film, you do use a couple of drone shots because you have to. I understand why you use them. But do you wish you could do a crane shot, or do you say, you know what, drones are available now, I'd rather use those?
Well, you know, what's funny is I bought a crane. Sorry. I have a crane actually, but I bought a, drone, for a movie I made called Countryside, and I used it for like three shots and I couldn't find anyone else to operate it. So I had to do it myself, and I had the worst phone. So my phone would keep disconnecting from the drone, and I was afraid that I was watching $700 fall out of the sky. So I didn't use it too much. And then,
in Gastly's, didn't you? Wasn't there a few Gastly's scenes with the drone?
And not a drone, but the crane. We use the jib arm. I'm pretty sure.
There's some scenes above the barn that look like they were drone shots.
Those are the ones.
Was This is a funny question to ask in front of an audience, but John, what movie came first? I don't remember. Did Gassies come before Countryside?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Then I didn't have the drone yet.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. But I prefer, well, for Galaxy Warriors, we're definitely going to be using a drone because we have girls running through a quarry to escape from a space prison. So you need kind of, I wish I had a helicopter, but unfortunately can't afford one of those. But I tend to use my jib arm a lot more often because I can get it, you know, 8 feet off the ground and just over top of the actors.
So when
they're necessary.
When you're doing casting for a film, obviously John's on board. I don't need to worry about him. How do you find your other people, like the newscaster, the bacon character? I mean, you've already recruited John's kids and your kids are in it. I already know that. But for the extra yeah. few people that need to come in, where do you find them?
For Conga specifically or just in general?
In general, well, whatever you want to talk about.
For Conga, it was literally, hey, everyone who's home and has a camera and wants to be in a movie. It's the easiest way you could be in a movie. You can be in a Brett Kelly movie and you can get your name on IMDb and all you got to do is turn your phone on. And so that was how we did that basically, except Megan Bacon was Ellen Mildred played her and she was already cast. She's in Galaxy Warriors and she had just posted that she got herself a green screen wall for her garage. And I said, hey, you want to be a news reporter? And she's like, yeah. So that's how that happened. But usually, we hold auditions. And I like to hold auditions every time. My mentality behind that is that if people will go to the effort to show you that they want to be in it, then they're actually going to do the work. Whereas I found a lot of independent filmmakers will tell me the same stories of woe. And I've been there where you offer somebody a part and then suddenly their attitude becomes, I'll see if I can do it. But if they have won the part through auditioning, then they feel like they have to come out and do a good job for some reason. It's, you know, because they earned it, they want to do a good job. But if you just hand it to them, it means less, it seems.
So when you're filming a film and an actor, let's use a fake name, maybe John, changes the dialogue, is that okay for you as a director or do you correct them?
It depends on the context and the actor, but I mean, I'll usually correct them. I mean, if it's because it's a kind of a pain in the ass to change the script because what a lot of actors don't know is that after you finish, and if you get a distribution deal, you have to submit that script to a distributor who then has to have it made into subtitles and stuff like that and closed captioning. So you have to go through the script and change every damn line they changed. So if they say, I can't go to the store instead of I cannot go to the store, I mean, not that one maybe, but I will not go to the store. Suddenly you have to change, you know, the stuff. So that's kind of a pain. So normally I'll correct them, but if it's natural and it's a flow and it gives them a good performance and that's cool. And sometimes, I mean, it depends on the movie too. Like, I mean, if someone's doing a really dramatic kind of like dramatic scene and we hit all fire in all cylinders, but they didn't nail every single line, then I'll work with that.
And from my perspective, more from the actor perspective, I tend to try and stay as close to whatever the script has because, you know, you got to figure that it was written like that for a reason. I might not pick up that the thing that I say, if I change it, actually changes or ruins or reflects on something that's supposed to happen later in the film. And now it doesn't make sense anymore because I didn't say the thing at the time that I should have. So, yeah, I tend to, as best I can, stick to, you know, what I'm given.
I used to teach acting classes. And whenever we do scene study or whatever, sometimes the actors would say to me, well, can I change this line to that? Or can I say this instead of this? And I said, why don't you ask yourself instead, why did the writers choose those specific words?
Right.
You know, like there was one scene I remember distinctly. There was someone had to say, and I traveled hither and thither. And they said, can't I just say from here to there? And I said, well, why did the writer say hither and thither? What does that say about your character? And they said, well, my character's a well-read librarian. And I said, yeah. So say what the writer wanted. So it's that sort of thing. Like, not to be, I mean, let's be honest. I'm the guy that made Jurassic Shark. I mean, I'm not making Shakespeare, right? So, but I have an appreciation for, you know, writers and the crafts that actors and writers do.
Okay. I think I know I didn't discuss a lot of Conga, but I think we got into a lot of good things. It's a children's film, people. I'm not going to ruin it for you. It's a lot of great jokes, and I would ruin them if I got into it, so I apologize. But I do have some fun questions, which John is very well aware of, but Brett isn't. Okay. But Brett, the first question's only for you because your first time on the show.
Okay.
What is your favorite film?
Double Indemnity.
Oh, great film.
Yeah, that's the best. That's probably, you know, it's funny. I saw it in a class. I took a film noir class, and I wasn't even aware that when it was over, I applauded. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize I clapped at the end. But I love it. It's my favorite film.
Okay, because I watch Conga TNT, what type of vegetable are you guys?
You want to go first, John?
I'm going to say potato, just because, you know, it's very versatile and goes with everything. How's that?
I'm a sweet potato, which, you know, like that, but sweet.
Yeah, fair enough. Your favorite dessert?
Probably, I'm going to go with Boston cream donut. Oh, I really like chocolate crackle ice cream, but it really doesn't like me, so we're breaking up.
I like pumpkin pie with whipped cream.
Yeah, Brett, you can come back anytime. John, I'm not so sure after that answer. Okay, your last question, really easy. Your favorite Charlton comic book character?
Blue Beetle.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, Blue Beetle.
Oh, see, I'm a judo master guy all the way.
Wow.
Well, that's pretty good, too.
Yeah, well, okay. All right.
Because Blue Beetle, man, he came from Fox. He's gone to DC.
Yeah.
He just sort of stayed there for like 7 to 10 issues.
Close favorites, Gunmaster, who people may not remember, but he was like the Lone Ranger knockoff. And the Sam Glasman Hercules is fantastic.
Oh, great book. Sam Glasman's Hercules, fabulous. Now, everybody, Conga is a children's film, okay? I'm telling you ahead of time. So don't send this guy an email saying, we didn't discuss the film. We did. Just got lots of jokes. I don't want to ruin them. I didn't want to get into it. I mean, it's a pandemic. They shot 20 feet away from each other. It's pretty obvious. So please don't get mad at me for not getting into the film. Enjoy it. It's got three different gorillas in it. That's all you need to know. Brett, before you go, tell them where they can find your film.
They could find this one at srscinema.com. And they also have t-shirts of it, which is pretty cool. I got to get one myself. And so, yeah, there's still a few Blu-rays and VHSs even available of it. But, DVDs, Blu-rays, VHS, and t-shirts of Conga TNT.
John, we know your website again.
I'm just on Facebook as Survival Zombie Films, and I'm on Vimeo as Survival Zombie Films, and you can see lots of content on Vimeo, and you can see what updates on what movie stuff we're doing on Facebook.
Oh, and check out Galaxy Warriors movie on Facebook.
Thank you for your time, guys, and have a great evening.
Thank you.